This episode is brought to you by Groove Washer, the best record cleaners and protective sleeves for your vinyl collection. Ask for the Groove Washer from your local shop or go to groovewasher.com. Discount code VinylGuide10. And now, on with the show.
Oh, well, hey, everyone. It's Nate. Welcome to a very special episode, number 381 of The Vinyl Guide. And let me explain why it's a very special episode. Normally, I'm talking to artists and record collectors about the rare records they made, get their memories of recording and pressing them up, and, of course, share them here on the podcast. Today is a little similar and a little different. First, it's different because I'm the guy who made the rare record. I was in a band in high school, and we cut a record, which is now, completely to my surprise, quite collectible. And in this episode, it's going to be me sharing the stories. However, I've invited along my old bandmates, Jason Waroff and Chuck Boyd, two guys who I've probably spent more time laughing with than any other humans on Earth. Jason, Chuck, and I were three quarters of the band Metropolis, and we made a record in our senior year of high school with two songs, Time Heals Everything and The Raven, and that record now goes for several hundred dollars on Discogs and the secondary market. That's pretty amazing, and it's a real head spin. But in cooperation with the team at Writing Easy Records, one of the two songs on that Metropolis 45 is part of the compilation Scrap Metal Volume 2, available at your local shop or direct from WritingEasyRex.com. And hey, let's have some fun. The Writing Easy Records team is putting together a giveaway, Scrap Metal March. So during the month of March 2023, post a picture on Instagram with the hashtag Scrap Metal March. It could be a picture of you with a copy of the Scrap Metal 2 record. Could be you making a metal face. It could be you recreating the cover of Scrap Metal 2. Whatever you decide, post it to Instagram during the month of March and make sure to include the hashtag Scrap Metal March. The Writing Easy Rex team, the Permanent Records team, and I will be following that hashtag and commenting and even reposting some of our favorites. So I encourage you to be creative. Innovation counts. Get our attention on Instagram with the hashtag Scrap Metal March, and you could be one of two winners of a collectible record pack. On March 31st, two winners will receive an original copy of the Metropolis single. In fact, these came from a box from my mom's house. It was stored for 20, 30 years. The winners will get a copy of that record that's highly collectible, plus some goodies from our friends at Writing Easy Records. I mean, this is like $300, $400 worth of records, easy. So don't sleep on it. Post to Instagram, give us a metal face, be creative, and put on the hashtag Scrap Metal March, and you could win some free records, courtesy of Writing Easy Records, Permanent Records, and of course your vinyl guide buddy Nate. It's Scrap Metal March, people, so do it up. Let's get into our conversation with Chuck and Jason, my former bandmates, talking and cringing and laughing about our first and only vinyl record. This week on The Vinyl Guide, I'm here with two of my lifelong friends I love absolutely dearly, Chuck Boyd and Jason Waroff, both my former bandmates in our high school band, Metropolis. Hey, guys, how are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good. How's it going?
Good. So look, I should probably let everyone else know, Metropolis, our high school band, was a four-piece. And we tried to get the drummer Joe as part of this conversation. We couldn't reach him. So we thought, I thought it would be fun to have all four of us together, probably for the first time. And was it? It's been 30 years now. Is that?
Are we? Yeah, I haven't spoken to Joe in at least that time.
Jeez.
Just, you know, Facebook. That's about it.
Okay. Well, he's alive, sounds like.
Yeah. It looks like he's doing really well. So.
Well, good. So look, this show is about talking with different musicians about the rare records that they're on, getting the stories, getting the details behind them, just trying to get a little bit of clarity in terms of some of the collectible records. And lo and behold, we are part of a rare record. Metropolis, Time Heals Everything with the B-side, The Raven. And apparently, I don't know if you guys have followed this very closely, they go for those 45s that we made go for around 150, 200 bucks on Discogs.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I was aware. I was really shocked. And, well, at first I was confused.
Well, look, people can hear at least one of those songs, The Raven, on Scrap Metal Volume 2, which is on Riding Easy Records. I'll put the link in this episode page. So let's start, I guess, at the beginning. So we were in this band, Metropolis. What do you guys recall about us coming together as a band?
From what I remember, we were kind of, you know, being really young and naive. We just thought, okay, we could barely play. Let's write our Dark Side of the Moon. And then we attempted it. We're like, okay, that's kind of difficult. So why don't we just like start with something simple and write like, you know, a couple standard songs, if you will, and just put that out, try to get some traction and then get our feet wet. And then we'll try to make an album after that.
Okay. So I know we always talked about making a record, and a record that we called Industry on Parade, like a full length album, like this big.
Yeah. It was thought out in our 17 year old heads of,
yeah,
we're going to fix the world. we're going to write this concept album that's going to make everyone see the light, and then we'll live in a better world.
So was that it? Was that your memory? Like we wanted to do the album, but then we realized, okay, we're out of our depth. Let's start with a 45.
That's my recollection. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a memory like kind of funny, like when we first got together, because I remember like Chuck and I were in a band. And I think we were calling ourselves Quicksand at the time.
Yeah.
But and we were jamming, so we had a different drummer at the time. And then I remember like one day I was at work at Arby's, and both of you guys came in.
Yeah.
And Chuck mentioned, and at first I didn't, even though I was in a class with Nate like my freshman year in high school. You look so much different because your hair had grown like totally long since then. And it'd been like at least a year or two since I'd seen you. So at first I didn't recognize Nate. And so it was funny, like, and Chuck mentioned like right away, like I was working at the register at Arby's, and I remember you guys came in and Chuck was like, yeah, this is Nate. Remember Nate? And he wants to know if we want to join a band, like join together, form a band. And so it was like, so I remember like, yeah, soon we did it. And then I forgot, like, it seemed like you had an idea for a record, like really, you might've already had the idea. If like, I don't remember, but
the
like,
full album, the full album or the like, single or?
No, the single.
Oh.
The single. It seemed like the idea for the single, I mean, my memory's kind of not totally clear on this, but like it seemed like that came pretty fast, because I remember like almost initially the first two things that you started showing us was those two songs from the single. And yeah. I remember you showing us those songs, and I remember like thinking like this is cool, like for me, like it was almost like next level of songwriting, because I remember like we're in a the songs like Chuck and I were playing, they're kind of more like basic. They're kind of more like almost more like Black Sabbath type riffs. Like, and they're kind of, so I remember when you showed us like Time Heals Everything, I was thinking like, man, there's no way I could write a song like this. And then The Raven, I remember you're teaching us The Raven, and that song, like one thing about that song, like you had to totally be tight. Because we're kind of, the way Chuck and I played at the time was, there were the type of songs where you could kind of screw around a little bit more, like kind of just more jam and stuff. So I was, remember like thinking like, wow, this is really cool stuff. But I remember like it being challenging at the time, because we had to be kind of had to step up our game and play a lot more disciplined, I thought. That was one of my first impressions.
Because I remember I had a four track, like one of those Tascam four tracks, and maybe that was yours that I was borrowing, Chuck.
Might have been.
Yeah, but I remember just kind of going over and over, or maybe it was even before a four track. Maybe it was just a cassette, like trying to bounce things back and forth with a goofy cassette player or two cassette players. And I remember I was so into Iron Maiden and I was trying to get the harmonies, and I, everything I wrote had a bunch of harmonies in it. So there was no way I could play it just myself. But do you remember, did we have anyone else on drums besides Joe in the early days, or was he kind of the only guy?
He was the only guy.
Okay.
I think the most drums we had was the drum pads on your organ.
Oh yeah. The goofy drum machine.
Because Chuck and I were jamming at the time, like with Daryl. I remember that. But but I remember you, Nate, like you had Joe in mind. So it seemed like you mentioned you knew a drummer, and I don't think I knew Joe before then. But so then one day we decided, I forgot how we first met, how I first met Joe, but like we found out like Joe had his garage was like a studio. So
yeah,
that was pretty cool.
That helps. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that was back in the days when you were in a band because you had a microphone. Like I know a guy that's a microphone, or I know a guy who has a bass, right? You know, but Joe, the first thing I heard about Joe is he's got this bitchin' practice place. And we were thinking, whatever, that's good enough. But then I heard him play. I'm like, oh, and he's good. Bonus. it's a bonus, right?
The problem with Joe's practice space is that it wasn't totally soundproofed, and he lived across the street from a sheriff.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So we would every time we'd start to play, it's, you know, within half an hour, it was knocking on the door, cops are coming, you know, and it was, so his studio, quote unquote, studio was really just a hangout place.
Yeah. I remember jumping through hoops to like make the sound place soundproof. We were getting like carpet and from like dumpsters and stuff and putting them up on the wall to sound it. Or we had the other thing we did is we used like a headphone amp. So we were all playing through headphones and he was the only one playing, you know, audibly, I guess.
Yeah.
And that was like miserable. and then when we went in, one thing I do remember is when we went the weekend before we went into the studio, we had to make sure we had it good. We practiced inside his house, so it was like more Detton sound.
So we got impressed at Rainbow Records. I remember that in LA.
Yeah.
And I think we found like an ad in the back of BAM magazine or something like that that said, get your records pressed for, you know, do you remember how much it was? Do you remember how much, what we paid?
I just looked at it. It was, and this is going to hurt hearing what today's prices are, but it was 1,000 units for, it was a total of $635. So it was around 50 cents.
But wait a minute. So we only got 500 made, right?
Oh, no, we got 1,000.
We got 1,000?
I thought it was 500 too, but I looked at the receipt, it says 1,000.
Oh dear.
And remember they used to have the 10%. They said we could go over by 10%.
Right.
And you still have to pay. And they would always go over 10% just to kind of stiff you for some extra money. So it's probably 1,100.
Okay. So we had the idea for the record. And again, we're in high school. Was it our senior year?
Yeah, it was the beginning of the senior year. It was like, I just saw a picture of the recording. It was like September, I believe.
Yeah. Just for everyone to know, Chuck is the resident pack rat. He saved all this documentation, all this shit.
I've always been a pack rat for that kind of stuff. And at the time I was kind of ashamed of it. Right. But now I'm kind of happy I did, because I have all sorts of stuff from mundane things to like, oh, this is really cool. Right. You know, like the test pressings, or I still have the metal stampers, you know, anytime we were mentioned in a school newspaper or anything like that, I always save it.
All right. So we needed to find a studio. Do you remember, because we got it done at Dick Diaz, what's it, something sound? What?
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it.
So it was the studio that was literally in our neighborhood. It was about five blocks from us.
We could walk to it, yeah.
It was in the middle of this house, in the middle of suburbia, and he transformed his garage and part of the living area into having, it was a two-inch recorder, right?
It was a 16-track 2-inch, yeah. And then the machine was in the room. Because I remember we went in to use the restroom, and it's just like loud as hell. Oh. Right. And his wife's just kind of working around it. Right. But yeah, it was crazy. And then the garage itself was the studio.
It was like they kind of reminded me of like June and Ward Cleaver, except they had a recording studio in their house.
Yeah.
And she said, "Hi, boys. How are you? Would you like water or something?" You know, she's looking after.
I was just looking at some pictures. There's like a picture of Jesus on the window separating the console room from the from the main studio.
Oh, were they religious? Did they do like a lot of religious recordings? Is that kind of what their
studio is? Well, that's what I was going to mention. Is one thing I remember about him is he was kind of shocked, like, "What? Who are you guys?" Because he mainly did just kind of like your singer-songwriter from church or whatever. Or he did like commercials. People come in and do, you know, car dealership commercials or whatever. So he wasn't really that experienced with like working with a rock band, if you will, right?
Do you remember how we found him? Did we just go to the Yellow Pages and kind of look for
you did.
Okay.
You're the one. Yeah, you're the one like, "Oh, I know a guy."
Yeah, I always assumed that it was you, Nate.
I don't remember knowing him. I probably just looked him up at the Yellow Pages.
You probably looked him up, but yeah.
I saw a flyer maybe at the supermarket that said, "We'll record music." Oh, okay, there it is. You know, it's just
Jacob.
how it happens. It was like a weekend, right? It was a Saturday, Sunday, kind of two 8-hour blocks. Is that right?
Yeah.
Sounds okay. Right.
Okay. And I remember we did like, you know, the first day recording, and then the second day was like vocals and mix down.
I have a vague memory of Joe being really nervous. I mean, we were all nervous, but I have a vague memory of us like really wondering like, "Oh my God, are we going to be able to get through this?"
Yeah, I think so.
You know, I totally forgot, but yeah, that now I'm remembering that too. I mean, I remember like I was totally nervous when it, especially for parts where, when it came down to like having to do like my guitar solo part and stuff, because I kept thinking I would screw up. But yeah, yeah. I do remember that too.
I remember thinking like, "Oh my God, Joe's getting really tired now, and so he's going to make more mistakes." I remember being stressed because look, we're spending every penny we had because Jason, you were working at Arby's. Chuck, you and I were working at Burger King or whatever. You know, it's like, you know, every month we were lucky if we made $400 or whatever. So it was kind of, we're putting everything into it, and everything just had to line up perfectly for us to kind of be on budget.
Yeah.
It was a big deal.
The one thing I remember about like when you're paying the studio like $20 an hour, which seems like nothing, but it was a lot then, right? Every second counts. It's like, I can't make mistakes because we don't have time to fix my problems, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of times you might leave a mistake there because you don't want to be the one to like waste everyone's time, right? But I guess that's what gives it its charm now. Yeah.
Can you still hear the mistakes when you
absolutely. Yeah, it's like I'm yelling at my 17-year-old self, like, "Dude, come on. Like, it's not hard." The other thing, too, is like, I didn't know anything about tone back then. I just kind of, like, plugged my bass. I still have the same bass. I just plugged it into the board. I didn't really think about, like, how I wanted my bass to sound.
Right. The weird thing for me is back then, see, I was in a couple of other bands, and you know, we played house parties and stuff like that, and we always had someone else doing the singing. And when it came to our band, I thought, "Oh, I'll just do the singing." Like, it never occurred to me like, "Wow, maybe I should train. Maybe I should be a good singer." I just said, "Oh, okay, just put a microphone in front." I didn't think about keys or anything. If, you know, the things are like way out of my range, and I'm like, you know, I'm like way, like I had no idea what I was doing, but I thought I did.
Speaking of tone, like that was one of my weak points, was I just didn't know. how to get a great tone on guitar. So that was one thing that kind of bugged me. So I'm like, I was surprised, like when we came, like when we recorded, like things came out, like sounded, I was surprised at how good it sounded though, actually, because it sounded like, I don't know, I guess having like the engineer in the studio helped somehow, because it came out, I don't know, my expectations, they weren't as good as like what it finally came out.
The day after we recorded it, so we record on a Saturday, a Sunday, and then the Monday is when we got word of Cliff Burton's death, if I recall that right.
I believe so. It was right around the time where we were making the sleeve. Oh, like, man. It was just like, oh, dude, add this.
Yeah.
Make sure you're dedicated to
it. That would make sense.
Yeah.
So let's, anything else about recording? Any other memories of recording?
But the only other thing I could think of is I do remember you trying to do harmonies, right? And one of the plans was, oh, we'll just play the tape at 7.5 and then record it at normal speed. And then we'll just play it back at 15, right? And it sounded like a chipmunk.
Oh, yeah.
Like harmonies. And so we just thought like, okay, clearly we don't know how this is done.
Okay.
I totally forgot about that.
There's a recording of it. We have a rough mix.
Actually, this is new memories now, because we recorded on a Saturday and a Sunday, and then I think we were coming back the next week to mix down. And we had some rough tapes of it, including the chipmunk one. And I remember Joe playing it for a bunch of people. And we got really mad at him, like, do not play the fucking, because we weren't, it was a mess. It wasn't mixed down. It had
this is stuff. Top secret.
Yeah. You
need to know.
I know. And they'd play it and it would be the chipmunk thing. And they'd be like, oh, yeah. You know, it was like, wait, you guys are getting the whole wrong idea about this. Yeah.
You know, I haven't thought about that in 30 years. Do any of you have a recording of that?
Yeah, I have. I'm just curious. Of course.
I got to hear that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, so Dick Diaz does the mix down. He gives us this tape.
Yeah.
Do you still have that? You got that back, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I have that, and then we had a bunch spun off for like to give to radio stations.
Yeah, okay.
Which,
yeah. Clearly they played.
Exactly. We did get it played once.
When did we get it played?
MKSJO is one of those. On Sunday nights, they used to play local bands.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could go on with that.
Okay, before we do, let's talk about the sleeve. I seem to remember, Jason, your dad somehow hooked us up with the sleeve. And I remember it was like a huge favor. It was like a huge thing that he was doing with his work. He was like, it's only once, we can only do it once. It was like a really going beyond. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I don't remember that much more than that, but I do remember, like, I forgot how I first brought it up to him, but he seemed like he was like happy to do it though. Like he worked, that's what his company did. So he said, like, I remember him mentioning, like, some people at his work actually thought it was kind of cool, like, oh, your son's making a record and stuff. So it was kind of neat, or I think some people thought it was neat, and I just remember him being happy to do it. Don't really remember, like, anything more than that helped us. And then I remember, like, we had a lot of work to do, like putting them all together and stuff.
That was fun. I mean, assembling them. But I do remember, we were just going to get the records in the plain paper sleeves with the hole cut, no picture sleeve or anything. And I remember then you said, I think my dad can do this, do a picture sleeve. We're like, oh, shit, really? That was like
no way.
Next level. But I do remember, Chuck, I don't know if you do or not, but I remember it like it was a huge favor. It was like a one-off. We can't ask for this again. It was like the one.
Yeah.
The
It was. I think it was just like, well, don't get in the habit of coming to us every time you want a record, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Because we would have done it.
So then we had the problem of what to put on it. Because we're like, oh, yeah, we can do a picture sleeve. It's like, okay, what are we going to do? So the front cover art is horrible. And I drew it I don't know. I don't know if we were pressed for time. What do you guys remember about the front cover art of the sleeve art?
Yeah, I just remember you were kind of in a hurry and you drew it. And it's like, we couldn't really step up and give it anything better.
Right? You know, it might have been, but like, maybe we're kind of just saying just to get this thing out. So, yeah. We spent the time recording it. We're happy with the recording and stuff. And we probably wanted to get it out like while we're still in, because we're in our senior year, I believe. And so it is kind of nice to be able to put it out while we're still in school so we can try to get it out to people at school and stuff.
Mm-hmm. We were in a hurry that was probably part to impress of it. The girls, right?
Yeah.
Using the quote fingers.
My memories of drawing it were like, okay, well, this has to be turned in this weekend, or this has to come. And I remember, I think I tried to get someone else to help me with it, but I wasn't really good at asking for help at that point. And, you know, this is, of course, 1986, where there was, you know, no computer, you know, to be able to.
I know.
So it was just like, okay, here's a piece of paper. I'm just going to draw what I think. And it was just, I look at it right now. It's like, oh, dear Lord.
Well, if we were smart, we'd ask Dave to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would have been stellar, but.
Yeah. I like the idea of it. I mean, like if you took that idea and then had someone professionally do it, it would have looked cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's even my handwriting on there. It's like, it's really overthought. There's also that little weird symbol down at the bottom. It's like, oh, I saw this picture of a UFO that had this on it, and I'm going to put that on it. And I think Joe wanted the M, the bottom of the M, to look like a blade. I think that was his idea.
Like, yeah. Oh,
if it looked like an axe blade. Really? And yeah, because Joe actually took his copies of it, and he'd draw them red with dripping blood and stuff.
Yes, I remember that.
For some reason, I was thinking you did that, Nate. Like, I remember, like, some, like, we considered them, like, the special edition.
Or something.
I didn't know Joe did it.
No, Joe did it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the back picture, did we take this picture just for the record?
Yeah. So I do remember that. We went to the Hellier Park in San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
And we took like a bunch of pictures. I still, you know, have them all. And our friend Bob took the pictures, and he, we had no idea how photography worked. So we're taking like pictures in like these beautiful background, a bunch of trees and shrubs, which is makes no sense. Right. And then that picture was a joke because we were in front of the bathroom. It was supposed to be like a ha-ha, we're taking a picture in front of the bathroom. And that was the only picture that was like didn't have a busy background. Or one of the only pictures, right?
Yeah. We didn't know about shading and all sorts of things.
We didn't know any of that stuff. Even though I was in photography. Yeah. In school, I didn't pay attention.
So I'm looking at the people we thanked and our parents and families. Ron Bender. Who's Ron Bender? Remember?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey everyone, I'm here to talk to you about Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Ever find a record in a used bin where the vinyl is gorgeous, but the sleeve has this ugly split and is even falling completely apart? Well, that's okay. Grab it anyway, because with Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips, you can fix that right up. Seems Easy record repair strips repair seam splits from the inside, so it doesn't affect the appearance of a record sleeve, but it does make it functional again. With Seems Easy, records can now slide in and out like new. Turn a $5 record into a $25 functioning collectible. Just ask your local record shop for Seems Easy strips, and if they're not in stock, go to seamseasy.com. That's Seems Easy with two Z's. Seems Easy record sleeve repair strips. Seems easy because it is.
Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits.
So I'm looking at the people we thanked and our parents and families. Ron Bender. Who's Ron Bender? Do you remember?
I have no idea. That was probably one of your,
I don't remember.
Your friends.
No, maybe he was the guy at Rainbow Records.
Oh, it might have been. It might have been somebody who helped us.
Because Dick Diaz is on there, right? Ron Bender, yeah. Dick Diaz. There's your brother, Jason. Chuck and I both put our girlfriends on it at the time. And then I've got a bunch of copies where their names are marked out. Really? Yeah, because we made the record and we had these girlfriends. And then by the time the record came
Not
out,
anymore.
We broke up with them. And so we just... I remember just taking whatever records, some of the records I had left, we just marked out their names.
It's like getting a tattoo or whatever in the Navy, right? You did get the Dear John letter.
Okay. All right. So any other memories of the sleeve?
Yeah. I liked the, wasn't it on the sleeve where we wrote unauthorized duplication will result in getting your ass beat?
Oh, that's on the label itself.
It's on the label. Okay.
There's one other thing about the sleeve we could maybe get to later, but it's there was a radio. There was another high school, It was another high school nearby that had a radio station.
Oh, Gunderson or whatever.
Gunderson. Yeah, maybe it's Gunderson. And they played our record and they ripped on it because the cover. Yeah. They didn't rip on the music. They just ripped on the cover. It looks like somebody scribbled it. And I just remember thinking, like, okay, well, I need to find this guy and beat his ass.
Yeah, actually, it was KLEL from, it was Leland High School.
That's right.
I remember that. I remember us listening to it and being like all sad because they're ripping on it.
So these sleeves, you got them flat. And I remember we had a couple of tape guns, like double sticky tape that we just kind of made this assembly line and just kind of went through. And your dad loaned us these tape guns. And I remember again, my memory of this is like, don't break the tape gun. So not many were distributed without the sleeve, if I recall. Almost all of them had the sleeve.
Yeah.
All right, so we had to design a record label, and we selected the name Scat Records.
Sure you want to go into that in full detail?
Well, yeah. So we worked at Burger King with this guy who was very troubled, maybe? I don't know. But he had some interesting ideas, and the word Scat, we thought, oh, that'd be hilarious. Scat Records. That sounds right. You know, it sounds like a record. Yeah. Scat Records, but it was an inside joke for us. It also has SR206. We had to pick a catalog number. We had to pick a number to put on the record. Do you remember SR206?
I do. I don't remember.
I think that was your employee ID, right?
That was my employee number at Burger King. When I went to Burger King and I had to clock in at the beginning of the shift, I had to go to the machine and say SR206. You know, and then it's like, okay.
Yeah. You go to one of the registers, right?
Yeah. And then we have DDD because we were into CDs and they were like, oh, AAD, DDD. We thought, oh, let's just put DDD on.
We can put whatever the hell we want. Doesn't matter if it's accurate.
Now, on the Raven, there's four Ds. Yes. And there you go, Jason. Unauthorized duplication shall result in getting your ass beat.
I don't know who would have done the ass beating because none of us were capable.
Actually, the Runout Groove, I never really looked at the Runout Groove until recently. R-10567. That must have been the Rainbow
pressing. Might have been Rainbow. Yeah. That's how they track their plates. Or
so we sent them the tape. We sent Rainbow the tape. We sent them the money, of course. Yeah. And then we got test pressings. Do you remember the day we got test pressings?
It was within 10 days because I saw an ad recently for Rainbow in one of the old BAM magazines. And like it's 10 business days turnaround. So maybe a couple weeks, I guess.
Okay.
But I do remember distinctly being at school and Joe came up all excited. Like, dude, the test pressings are here. Or Nate just told me the test press. I'm like, what? He didn't have to go through the whole day of school without hearing it, right?
Okay, so we all got a box of 250 records.
Yeah.
Put together and everything, right around 250, I guess. If we got 1,000, yeah. What did you do with them?
Well, I think our plan was, we definitely wanted to, like, let's get these out there. We didn't know how it worked, right? So we're like, let's get these out to record stores, right? And then we'll sell them at school. So at first we were selling them for like a buck a piece at school. And the first like 20 flew off the shelves. Yeah, I'll buy one. And after those 20 people, it's like, it's okay. I'll pass.
Crickets.
So then we started giving them out at school, right?
Yeah. I gave a lot away. I remember that. And I think, I remember we got them into some local record stores, like, I forgot which ones, like, Streetlight, I think, and Sour, maybe, and because I think we even had an ad in like a local paper, or maybe it was BAM or something, advertising them and like being in local stores and stuff.
Did we do a paper ad? Did we do an ad like in BAM?
So all that stuff I remember. We made a radio spot on the 4-track.
I remember that. I remember the radio spot. It was And no doubt you still have that.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Well, I'll put that radio spot at the end of this episode.
Yes. It's terrible. But I remember you had a friend that worked at Tower, right?
Yes.
And like they weren't going to give us any money, but we just snuck them in there and just put them on the thing, right?
And then
we went to Streetlight Records and they were like, yeah, we'll sell them, but you got to advertise it somehow. So we made the radio spot and we brought it in and we said, look, we made a radio spot. And I can't remember if we actually put it on the radio. It seems like we wouldn't have money for that, but I think they were like convinced, okay, there's a radio spot. You can sell them here.
I remember we bought radio time at like 2 in the morning or something. I remember it was about $7 to $10.
That's right.
To run it. And we did a couple of them. I think we gave him like $30 or something. And we're like, oh, it's the middle of the night. So we did run it, but it was, no one heard it.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that they wanted it on 1/4-inch tape. And we're like,
oh, yeah.
How are we supposed to do that?
We had to figure everything out. Like, record stores don't just want these things, you know?
And yeah.
So then, you have to advertise. Oh, okay. How do we figure this out? And we made an ad on a 4-track and then took it to the radio station. Like, okay, how do we do it? You know, $30. Oh, we're pulling like ones out of our pocket and stuff. It's like, no, and write us a check. Oh, I don't even have a checkbook. I'm a 17-year-old dork. So I seem to recall us taking it to some record stores. And some record stores, we snuck it in. We just snuck it in and put it on the shelf. And Chuck, I remember we snuck one into Rainbow Records. We snuck a handful in.
It's a different Rainbow. Yeah.
Yeah. Different. Yeah. Rainbow record store. And then you went in and bought it. So.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? I remember the guy ringing it up because it was one of those shops where like the owner is one guy working there and he's the owner.
Right.
Or maybe he has one other person. But I remember him looking at it and going like, what the hell is this?
So I also remember because I worked at the liquor store right across from the street from the high school, Mike's Liquors. And I remember Mike's Liquors. We would sell them at Mike's Liquors and for like $2 each. And I remember they sold a few of them just because I worked across the street and it was across the street from the high school. So, it was, another outlet. But by and large, out of the 250 we all had. We probably at some point had a box of about 210 that we had no idea what to do with.
Yeah. It was quite a bit after a while.
I remember years later taking just a box or two just to the dump.
Yeah, that was my story too. I had about 40 or 50 left. And then my ex-wife's like, get rid of this stuff. Or my wife at the time was like, why are you holding on to this? I'm like, I don't know. maybe one day it'll be worth something, right?
That's what happened to a lot of mine too. Like, I didn't know this was kind of, you know, it was one of those points, like way, way, way after all this, it's like probably a couple decades later. And like, what am I going to do with these? And this was way before we ever saw, maybe before eBay or something, like before we ever knew, like people would be like, buying these on eBay and stuff. So it's like, I didn't know what to do.
What's your first memory of hearing that people wanted this record? I mean, like, 10, 20 years after we recorded it. What's your first memory of that?
From you. I think you sent us like a message on Facebook or something, like with a link to eBay. And it was like $100 or something. Like, it was some crazy price. And I couldn't believe it. Seeing it there.
Yeah, I remember someone reached out to me like when Facebook came around. And like when Facebook first started, you had a flood of like, I don't know this guy. Then you look, you go, oh, look, he went to Santa Teresa. I probably went to school with him. So I was getting a lot of those. And then one day I got a message from someone saying, like, hey, are you the Chuck who is in Metropolis? And like, because a lot of people from high school kind of knew us as, if they didn't know us personally, they knew us as, oh, you're the guys who made the record.
Yeah.
Right. So I got that a lot. Like, oh, you made that record. I remember you. Right. So someone reached out saying, hey, you know, did you make this record? I'm like, yeah. Expecting they're from high school. And it turns out they're from somewhere in Europe.
Mm-hmm. And they get a few of those too. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, well, what? And then, you know, I think he claimed that he was in Georgia.
And country Georgia?
No, Georgia in the U.S.
State, okay.
And he found a copy. So I'm like, how did it get there, right? And what my thought at the time was, maybe somebody went to high school with, joined the Army, got rid of their crap when they're getting deployed to the Gulf or something, you know? And he wanted to buy, you know, he wanted to know if I had any left, right? I'm like, why would you want to buy them? You know, and it turns out, oh, because, you know, people are aware of it, right? And I'm assuming it was for the fact that it's an indie release and that mm-hmm. there's so few of them. It's desirable of collectors who collect indie stuff, right?
That was long before Discogs. So like it must have been, and I have no idea about this, but aside from eBay, it must have been on some sort of collector list or some sort of way that all these record collectors were able to just start learning about it. Because I got the same thing too. I got people pinging me like, hey, you're in Metropolis. Do you have any of those records you'd like to sell? And I didn't have any at the time. I found a couple at my mom's house, you know, a couple trips ago to California. But for a while, I actually had a guy who reached out to me that we went to school with. And he said, hey, I still got your record. I'm like, oh, shit, really? I don't have a copy of that. And he sent me his.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Girl, thank God.
So that was my only copy for a while. But then I found a couple copies at my mom's house. But yeah, it's just kind of strange. Do you think people enjoy it?
I think so.
Hopefully.
I mean, you know what's funny?
They're not that bad.
Well, at the time, I was confused, so I started Googling, right? Like Metropolis, Time Mills, everything. And I found it on like a pirate radio streaming service in Europe. Mm. And it just catered to like obscure metal.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm like, well, maybe that's where somebody put it there. And that's how it got some attention.
most people tend to think the Raven is the better song, or probably the more representative of kind of what we started doing afterward anyway. And that's what's on, you know, Scrap Metal. I'm glad it's the Raven. Time Heals Everything is a pretty average song. The Raven seems to be a little bit more interesting, but yeah. that seems to be much closer to, like, you know, 80s metal than certainly the A side.
Yeah.
In some ways I like Time Heals Everything better, but they're two like totally different songs. Like, I think the Raven was a lot more like the other songs we did. The Raven was a lot more our style. Like, when I hear the Raven, I always think of kind of like the new wave of British heavy metal type bands. Like, it fits in with one of those.
Yeah.
And Time Heals Everything. Like, I was trying to think of like who if someone did a cover of that song, like who would be like a good person to do it. I think maybe like Sammy Hagar, like, could, like the type of stuff he did in the 80s. Like, it kind of fits in with that kind of music. Like, so it's kind of a departure from, like, it wasn't our usual stuff, but I like it as a song. Like, I think it was pretty cool.
One thing I find funny about Time Heals Everything is just the fact that you have, like, a 16-year-old kid giving everyone relationship advice. Like, don't worry, time heals everything, you know? It's like, yeah. Just wait, buddy. Wait till you grow up.
We record it now. It's like time crushes your spirit. Anything else? Any other memories of, especially around the record, the physical record itself?
The only thing I'm like happy for is the fact that it is a record. So if we would have like recorded these two songs and put them on like a cassette and gave them out to our friends, I don't think we wouldn't be talking about it right now. Right.
Yeah.
It's the fact that it's on vinyl is it's like it's set in stone or something. Right. It's a really unique format, and it was a transitional period too, where when we made the record, it made sense to make a record, but then a year later, people were like, oh, you should be making CDs. Right. And people who made records are old school. So if it would have been a year later, we probably would have. And CD, I remember we looked into it.
Yeah. Right?
Because we wanted to put out a CD for our album. And it was a lot of money. It's going to be, I thought it was like $10 a disc or something.
Do you remember who we were working with that CD?
Yeah, I can't remember the company.
No, it was Optical Media, and the guy that was answering our questions and stuff on that was Kevin Gilbert.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Because he had made the giraffe.
Giraffe, that's right.
Yeah. And we're like, okay, this dude did it.
Yeah.
Do it, right? Of course, we're miles away from Kevin Gilbert, but that didn't matter, right?
that was one thing I was really looking forward to. It's like, the songs we're doing for Industry on Parade, those are really good songs. That was one of my regrets, like, that we didn't go through with that, because I think that would have been pretty cool.
Yeah, I would love to get like some really good musicians to be able to do it. I mean Jason, I know you're different, and you practice quite a bit. I mean, you knew your craft much more than I knew my craft. But I never gave it really much time. And vocally, I was, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. But I do think the songs that we ended up writing were pretty interesting. I'd love to hear them recorded by like some professional musicians.
Someone who knows what they're doing. Or maybe if this were happening today, you know, there would be a lot of auto-tune and quantizing. And
there's a record.
It's probably easier to get away
a couple
with
of things. Yeah, I think like a couple of things, like some of them were so hard to play that I think I remember screwing up a lot, like, because some of them were pretty challenging. And then the other thing was they're kind of so complex. I think like if we had like a producer or someone that really knew how to produce the songs, that would have failed a ton because it was kind of hard to get like the greatest sound on some of those.
Yeah.
I think because we have like a lot of demos of those songs, but they like the production is maybe in some cases like the worst part.
There's an album from the band Bad Religion made this album called Into the Unknown. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but they start out as a punk band, put out a couple, put out a single, I think maybe two, and then they tried to make their opus, which was Into the Unknown, and it has a lot. It reminds me of kind of what if we had had a little bit more money and opportunity and had made Industry on Parade. It reminds me of kind of what that was because their songwriting, and even they admit this. You know, they said, you know, if you're going to write progressive rock, you need to come to it with a lot more talent than we had.
Then. Yeah. Yeah, you have to be on your A game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing that's true is even let's just say for sake of argument that like, you know, we were proficient and we made this great recording, right? Then you'd have Nirvana.
Yeah.
around that time period, right? It's like, okay, it's not really fitting in the way the music industry is going, right?
Either way, we would have wound up working at a gas station.
but I'll give us credit for at least as far as that goes, is like we weren't really trying to do what was popular at the time. Because even like the songs we were doing, like I mean, there's progressive rock and stuff and progressive metal, but like it wasn't the stuff you'd hear on the radio all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at the time it was like Poison. You know, that kind of stuff was breaking, or, you know, Motley Crue was really big and we had no interest in going in that direction.
Oh, but I was always thinking like, okay, like Iron Maiden, like how they'd always have real complex songs and then they would talk about these topics, even, you know, Rime of the Ancient Mariner and 2 Minutes to Midnight. It's like, oh, this is a worthwhile, you know, topic to discuss. But again, you're, as you said, Chuck, it's like we're 16 or 17 years old. What sort of wisdom are we able to impart at that age?
Maybe that's why the Ravens is the better of the two, right? Because at least then you have some Edgar Allan Poe words in there where it's not just a 16-year-old kid giving the world life advice.
And I could picture Maiden doing the Raven, like maybe doing a cover. Or I was also thinking, like, what if Judas Priest did a cover? I think that would be pretty rad.
I do think it's a good song. Well, now more people are going to hear it with this whole Scrap Metal Volume 2. So maybe we will get another band that tries to cover it.
They'll do it proper.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think of the music now kind of being available on that Scrap Metal, at least the Raven is on that compilation?
Pretty cool.
It's
nice that people can hear it. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. I was honored, I guess. Well, this is cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little piece of history. And I love the concept, right. Of that, there were a lot of bands in the 80s that had that DIY spirit and they just wanted to rock and they didn't care what anyone thought. Right. And like, you know, it's something good that they have it captured. Some of it captured right on vinyl.
Like how Metal Blade do they still do it? Like put out those like compilation albums with like a bunch of unknown groups. I remember that was another thing. Like, weren't we trying to get on like some compilation album? I know it wasn't Metal Blade, but I don't think it was.
I remember having more than one conversation. There were a couple projects that were happening where they're like, hey, would you like to be on this compilation? We're like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And they're like, okay, it'll be $400. There were business opportunities. Some of these compilations were like, they're just kind of getting everyone to pitch in money to be able to do it. And back then, again, we're working at a liquor store and Arby's and different places. Mm. hard to make that happen.
Yeah, I remember we did sign on to one compilation like back then, and then I guess it didn't happen. But it was that guy. Do you remember who it was, Nate? It was a guy from the Faction.
Oh, Caballero.
Yeah, I don't know if it's Caballero or. I just remember we went to his house. I'm like, oh, that's the dude. Like, no way. I that's another thing I have a receipt of. I think it was $200. Yeah, because we got our money back when. Because I was thinking like, oh, they're gonna stiff us. Right. And then we went to his house and he was like, here, dude. He just gave us money back. We're like, oh shit, it's the guy from, maybe it wasn't.
Was it IM Records?
It might have been. Yeah, I'm probably not.
Adam Siegel.
Yeah, that's who it is.
Fuck. Okay.
Yeah. Wait, who is he in?
Dude, he's in the Faction.
Yeah, I knew he was in the Faction, yeah.
Yeah, he's. But Adam Baum Siegel. He was. He's now a lawyer in Las Vegas.
No way.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And they're still doing all the Faction reissues and stuff like that. Okay.
Yeah, the Faction were awesome.
I remember. Yeah, because they were kind of the local band that
did right.
Did right. Yeah. Exactly. I also remember we got this manager for a brief period of time. That guy in San Francisco.
Yeah.
You remember him?
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
Remember we drove to San Francisco and we're like, dude, I can't imagine, like, my kids are about that age. I can't imagine them driving to like San Francisco from here, right, by themselves. But we drove there and on the way home, we didn't know how to get to the freeway. And then we found El Camino Real, which El Camino runs all the way down, right? So we just took El Camino all the way home.
It took us like 4 hours to drive.
They were stupid. And then finally we see Guitar Center and we're like, oh, okay. Like, now this is familiar.
Oh, that's hilarious.
I'm surprised we're still alive.
Any other memory? Anything else? Anything else to share on this?
One thing I do remember is when like the record came out, I gave my parents one, right? Like, mm-hmm. Hey, look, my record. And so my dad got one and he had it, you know, for years. And he recently passed away and we're looking through the his desk, right? Looking for paperwork and stuff, and I found the record. And I'm like, oh, he kept it at least. And then when the scrap metal thing came up, you know, I guess they use vinyl as the source, right? So right. That's the record. That's the record I said.
Or that. Oh, okay. Get.
So it's kind of nice to know that, like, everyone's listening to my dad's record now. You know, I don't know if he ever played it, but
yeah,
it's a good memory.
Oh, that's nice. It actually sounds good. I've heard what they've done with it on scrap metal, and it sounds good. And it sounds all balanced with everything else too.
Exactly. So. Well, my worry was it would be an outlier, right? Like there would be all these songs and then there'd be, ugh. You know? And then it would go into like other stuff. And I think it actually fits in really well. It's a really cohesive flow with like the rest of the, and what the other thing I love about the scrap metal is it's almost like people who were thinking exactly how we were thinking at the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
wonder how many of these still exist in the world. What, maybe 40?
Oh, the record.
Yeah, 50 maybe. I know I took at least 150, maybe 200 to the dump.
Yeah, it's probably pretty low, I would say, you know, maybe 100 or less.
Yeah.
But occasionally I do get people from high school reach out to me on Facebook and say, oh, I still have your record.
Okay.
Yeah. What was great about it is we drew all over them. So each one is unique, right? Like Joe would put the blood thing on there, or we would like sign them or something like that. Or just draw little doodles of each one.
Oh, that's fine. Because I think the one on Discogs right now is one that we autographed. back.
Yeah, I think it was like that for a while. Yeah, when the
oh, here it is. Oh my God! Oh, that's Australian dollars. $309 Australian dollars is what this one is going for, and it's in Belgium.
Is like that
weird?
Well, that's the one thing that fascinates me about vinyl is like, how did it get there, right?
Oh, dude, the one on Discogs is red. It's blood. It must be one from.
It's from a Joe.
Right. Joe.
It's a Joe special. Yeah.
So I wonder how many of those are out there. The red one.
The Joe special. Did you guys ever used to practice your autograph?
I did. You know, it's funny. I was like, well, you're going to be famous someday, so you better get a good autograph down. So I did it the way I do with I'm going to draw a C and start the H in the middle of the C. And I still sign that way today, which is funny because, you know.
It's like you approach it like a life skill. Well, you better, you know. All right. Well, guys, Jason, Chuck, thank you so much for catching up. This has been good. I'm brought back a lot of great memories. And I love each of you very dearly. And some of the best times in my life were spent with you guys and being in this band and, you know, making this record. That was a huge accomplishment when I was young. And it really kind of, I think, you know, it taught me a lot. I'm not sure exactly what it taught me, but I know when I was young, that was something that was, I always kind of think of it as kind of one of those tent poles of my life, you know, and I'm so glad I did it with you guys and that you guys are doing well and happy and healthy. And I certainly hope Joe is too. And that we're still around to be able to talk about this record and that, you know, the Riding Easy guys and Lance over at Permanent thought enough of it to put it on Scrap Metal too. So, just want to call out to anyone who's interested in hearing my old band Metropolis and especially the song, The Raven, check out Scrap Metal Volume 2. It's available at Riding Easy Records. There's a few different vinyl pressings out. There's a blue one. There's a standard black one, and they made the song The Raven sound really, really good. So I'm very proud of that. I'm glad it's out there. And then if anyone out there has a copy of this Metropolis 45, it's actually quite exceedingly rare. I've watched the prices go up over the last several years, surprisingly high. So it's kind of hard to believe that not only am I a record collector, but something that I made is now on that record collector list. That makes me quite proud as well. Chuck, Jason, thank you so much for spending time, and let me know when you guys are ready to record another record. I'll be there.
Awesome, man. Thanks.
Thank you, too.
How lucky am I to have had friends like Chuck and Jason? I'm very blessed. So glad they're doing well. Hope Joe is, too. And, oh, there's an extended version of this conversation at patreon.com/vinylguide. Oh, and don't forget, Scrap Metal March people, post to Instagram, #ScrapMetalMarch, and you may be one of the winners to get a free record pack featuring an original Metropolis single and some goodies from Riding Easy Records. That's #ScrapMetalMarch. Do it up. That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on your social media. Share them on Facebook. Tweet them out on Twitter. Put them in the Reddit forums and Facebook groups. All that stuff. That is always so appreciated. And we'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.
Hey, well, lucky you. You found the secret track. Here is the radio commercial we made for the record on a 4-track tape in 1986. Enjoy.
After all those years of growing up... And after all those years of getting ripped off by music stores...
Yeah, I'll make what the best deal, I swear by it.
I'll take it.
And after all those years of taking winos to fast food restaurants...
Come on, Rich, let's go to Burger King.
But I want a Big Mac.
And now, after all those years, Metropolis has finally released their new single, Time Heals Everything. This energy-filled single is only a start for these four musicians who create a comforting mood in the song Time Heals Everything and flourish the bite of heavy metal with the B-side The Raven. This single is available on Metropolis' very own Scat Records label and is available at Tower Records in Campbell,
Rainbow on Blossom Hill,
The Warehouse,
Streetlight Records on Baskin,
and Mike's Liquors on Santa Teresa and Snell.
Just ask for Metropolis. Special thanks to Rich the Bum.